Welcome to the All Access version of the ProWrestling.net podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 16th. Olympic hockey starts today. I don't care if you're just a casual fan of hockey. Turn on Olympic hockey. I think you'll enjoy the heck out of it. But I know you're not here to listen to me talk about Olympic hockey. Let's talk about last night's WWE Raw show. Right before we get into it, though, I'm going to give you guys a quick plug for the .net members site. If you're listening on the ad-based version of the site or on iTunes, very simple to sign up. And if audio is your thing, you're going to get plenty of it. We do at least 3 hours of new audio every week with Raw recaps each and every week, either posted on the all-access version or the .NET member exclusive recaps of each and every pay-per-view. 2 hours of weekly Q&A in which I answer .NET member questions, and also the first look at .NET news. And right now, .NET members are reading a story about a top TNA star who is banged up and is likely to be taking some time off from the road as far as the house shows go. So plenty on the .NET member site, and it's just $5 a month. Screw Jared, screw Subway, skip that $5 sub today and sign up for a full month of .NET membership for the price of just $5. All right, now that we've got through that, let's jump into this Raw show. I thought it was the worst show of 2010. I went into this very excited, looking forward to the show. It's pretty rare that WWE actually advertises 3 matches in advance, and all of them look pretty good on paper. And so I was excited about the show, thinking that they would build around those matches and deliver good final hype for the pay-per-view. And instead, we got a really awkward Bret Hart angle and one of the worst uses of celebrity guest hosts that I've seen with Jerry Springer. That segment was just downright embarrassing. I would not have wanted one of my non-wrestling friends to have been over and happen to catch that segment and then have to explain that to them. Just embarrassing. It was WWE creative team getting a little too cute, living their fantasies of writing a Springer episode when they should have been focused on the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. But let's start at the top. We got 15-year-old singing sensation Allison something or other singing the national anthem, right, I guess, for President's Day. Images were shown of various U.S. monuments. She did fine. She didn't exactly hit all the high notes, but she's 15. I'm not going to rip on her too much. She did a good job. We got Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler introducing the show and hyping Jerry Springer as the special guest. And then the first match of the night, they went right to one of the 3 advertised matches. It was WWE Champion Sheamus defeating Randy Orton by DQ in an apparent non-title match in 8:35. Orton was really over. He got the big babyface reaction when he came out. The fans want to cheer Orton, and if WWE decides to go in that direction, turn him and have him start working exclusively with heels, I think he's going to be maybe the most over guy in the entire company, because I think that the segment of the fan base that John Cena doesn't cater to, I think that Orton is going to get the regular Cena fans and then even the detractors as well. So I think the sky's the limit as far as Randy Orton's concerned as a babyface, as long as WWE doesn't make the mistake of making him really tweak the character and start becoming that smiling babyface. And I don't think they will. As long as they just stick with some variation of what we get from Orton now, I think it's going to work like a charm. The match was solid, and then Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase came to ringside. Orton was actually the one surprised by this, and Sheamus took advantage of it momentarily. Late in the match, it was DiBiase trying to attack Sheamus, only to eat a punch from Sheamus, and then Cody punching Sheamus from behind. This was going down at ringside. The referee saw Cody's punch and called for the DQ, and then afterward, Cody and Ted entered the ring and pled their case with Randy Orton. Orton was seething over this and ended up hitting Cody Rhodes with an RKO. Sheamus ran in and nailed Ted with a big boot to the face, and then Orton hit the RKO on Sheamus, and the crowd cheered Randy Orton afterward. Good opening match. I mean, I guess my question is, if you have an out anyway, why not make it a title match? Maybe it's just because the Elimination Chamber is coming up. I don't know. But if you've got a way for Sheamus to retain the title, why not make it a little more prestigious and put the title on the line? We got a shot of Bret Hart walking backstage, and after a commercial break, he ended up coming to the ring and said it was a shame that Vince wasn't in the building. He said he would have met him at the airport, the hotel, or even at the building, because he said he came to Raw to finish things once and for all with Vince McMahon, and there was a loud Bret chant that broke up. This was not the best Bret Hart promo. I thought he got lost at one point when he thanked John Cena, and just kind of he was in the process of thanking him for something, and I think he kind of lost track of what he was saying because he moved on quickly. Just thank you, my friend, and then thank the fans again. So he's thanking everybody and saying that it just wasn't meant to be, and he said victory will last a lifetime, but excellence will last forever. And he said he just wanted to take a moment to thank the WWE superstars for welcoming him and the WWE Universe for being so kind and having him back. Basically, long story short, because Vince wouldn't accept the match, Bret was leaving. He was done. He figured there was no point in sticking around. Once he did leave the ring, Cole and Lawler were discussing his comments at ringside, and Lawler said that Hart won't stick around if Vince won't get in the ring with him. They cut backstage to Bret, who was approached by Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger and Alicia Fox, Primo Colon, Gail Kim, and Evan Bourne, everybody thanking him and saying their goodbyes. And that's when Michael Cole actually said that Bret really, and this is a quote, really touched a lot of young superstars in the locker room, end quote. Yeah, I know my mind shouldn't work that way, but I know I wasn't the only person going, wow, that was really awkward, Michael. Thank you for that. They cut backstage to Hart again, and he was walking through the parking area where John Cena was trying to talk him into staying. Cena thanked Bret for coming back. They shook hands, and Bret was climbing inside of his limo. Cena was walking away, and all of a sudden there was this big commotion behind him. A blonde woman backed her car into the limo. Cena was like yelling at the woman, telling her to move her car as he tended to Bret. And then Evan Bourne and Gail Kim arrived at the scene. Cena told them that Hart's leg was caught in the door, and a trainer showed up and sent a radio message for help saying that Bret had an injury to his lower extremities. There's a hockey thing for you, because you get around Stanley Cup playoff time, and every injury is either an upper body injury or an injury to the lower extremities. They really don't reveal much. Yes, I'm in total hockey mode right now, waiting for this Team USA thing to start. The trainer worked on Hart's leg. They eventually got him out of the car and placed him on a stretcher and rushed him out of the building by ambulance. I didn't catch it. Somebody told me. I noticed it was a black leg immobilizer. Someone actually pointed out the thing had pink trim on it. Weird. Really weird angle. A couple of .NET readers have pointed out since then an idea that makes a lot of sense, which is that Bret and Cena were in on this. It's all a work. They're going to get Vince to come out and boast that he would, you know, would have faced Bret Hart and would have kicked his ass at WrestleMania, but now he's injured and Hart strolls out in a wheelchair and says he'll take the match anyway, and the overconfident Vince agrees, and then Bret stands up and reveals that it was a hoax. And if that turns out to be the case, fine, but this did not make for the best television. It was more awkward than anything. I was really turned off by the announcers. I normally don't get into scolding announcers for using the somber voice. It comes up a lot with people because of, when they genuinely had those voices, Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, when Owen Hart passed away and during some other key moments. And, everyone just assumes that they're trying to, you know, recreate that feel whenever they use the somber voices. There's times in wrestling where you have to use those voices. So I don't get all bent out of shape when they, you know, sound somber and trying to put over certain angles. What irked me was, you know, you saw Bret being loaded into the ambulance. You heard Cole and Mahler using the somber voices, and it's like, ooh. As I wrote last night, I would have been lying if I said that, it didn't bring back a bad memory. I don't think that's what they were going for, but I really didn't need to hear Michael Cole say later in the show that this was, I can't remember the exact wording he used, but that basically implying this was the most tragic night of Bret's life. I'm like, oh, come on, really? You just don't say that. We all know the Bret Hart story. Maybe younger viewers aren't completely familiar with everything that happened with Owen, but I think 90-some percent of that viewing audience is well aware of the Owen Hart tragedy, and we just didn't need that. I was really turned off by it. I doubt it was intentional, but if it was, shame on them. If it's not, shame on them for not thinking about that and taking that into consideration when they were planning out the show. Once they got through all the Brett stuff, we got to Mark Henry and MVP defeating The Miz and Big Show in a non-title match in 6:35. Lawler spent the match talking about Jerry Springer and how he'd be bringing his show to Raw and blah, blah, blah. They did the usual, and this happens like every match now. As soon as someone gets thrown to ringside, bam, they go to commercial. It's the most predictable thing in the world, and it happens like three, you know, basically any match that's going to go through a commercial break, it seems like that's how they go to commercial now. And they've been doing it for a long time, but it's just starting to kind of annoy me when I see it week in and week out. After the break, the tag champs were in control of the match. A short time later, Henry avoided a show splash off the second rope, and then MVP tagged in and ran right into a big boot from Big Show. Miz entered the match and covered MVP, who then rolled Miz into a pinning position and got the upset win. So Miz and Show lose their first match since becoming tag team champions. I'm guessing this will set something up at Elimination Chamber, but it was never officially advertised for that show. Last week I was complaining about TNA taking so damn long to get their pay-per-view lineup out, and I thought it was a mistake that they didn't have the tournament brackets finalized a week sooner than they did. And TNA's made the mistake of waiting until the last minute to add a lot of matches to their pay-per-views in the past. WWE seemed to be taking a page out of TNA's playbook this time around because they're four matches. Here we are like 5 days away from the show and they have four matches advertised, and maybe it won't be your typical seven match show because of the Elimination Chamber will eat up a lot of that time. So maybe they're not going to add too much more, but you'd think we're going to get more than four matches. Why not get those out of the way? The only excuse I can come up with for them, maybe they're still going to go with Henry and MVP challenging Miz and Show at the pay-per-view, but Miz and Show do have a title defense tonight on ECW, the final ECW broadcast, against Yoshitatsu and Goldust. So maybe in somebody's mind they were worried it was going to overshadow that if they actually announced a tag title match. So my guess is we still get that, but just completely speculating here at this point regarding what match they may or may not add to Sunday's show. And speaking of Sunday's show, .NET members will be listening to an exclusive audio recap of the Elimination Chamber shortly after the show late Sunday night. So that will not be available as an all-access version of the podcast, nor will Monday's WWE Raw audio recap. So just a quick little teaser to let you guys know what the taping schedule is going to be as far as .NET audio goes. And again, $5 a month if you want to get in on all .NET audio and all the various perks of membership, including the ad-free version of the site. Back into the Raw show, we got, after commercial break, Justin Roberts introduced Jerry Springer, who was escorted to the ring by two members of his television show security team. So we did not get the celebrity whore Bella Twins hanging all over the celebrity host this week. The ring had a television monitor set up with the Springer logo. He shook hands with the fans and then thanked them once he entered the ring, and he said this was a special edition of his show and promised that the fans would think differently about some of the people that they cheer and boo. I guess he was kind of right, because when this was over with, I thought differently about everyone involved in this, and for all the wrong reasons. We got Kelly coming out. The story here was that she is pregnant, according to... it was revealed as a hoax later. Sorry about it. We're going to have to get sidetracked for a second. An arrest warrant has been issued for WWE star Chris Jericho, a bench warrant. He failed to appear in court and failed to pay the fine that he received as part of the public intoxication that he was charged with relating to that January arrest both he and Hurricane Helms. Just posted the details on the website, so chances are you've probably seen this by now if you're listening to this, but for those who haven't, you can check out ProWrestling.net for a recap of the story that TMZ has posted. But let's get back into this whole Springer thing. As I said, basically, you know, the premise was that Kelly was pregnant, and apparently she's a hussy who sleeps around because she didn't know who the baby daddy was. And she said she might know. Santino Marella's entrance music played. He strolled to the ring to a nice pop. I guess it's worth noting that when she announced that she was pregnant, there were as many groans in from the live crowd as there were cheers. So I don't know that wrestling fans are ready for another pregnancy angle. Santino said he's the papa. He alluded to hotel drinks being the cause. Kelly said that when Santino was sleeping, she needed someone to finish the job. And I was at this point where I'm like, wow, yeah, this is that PG programming that WWE is so proud of here. And Bullet, trust me when I say that I'm not offended by any of this. I'm very difficult to offend, but it's, you know, when WWE touts the fact that it's producing PG programming, they should produce PG programming. Michael Cole then stood up at the announcer's table with a mic in his hand and said, Kelly just revealed their little secret. Then Jerry Lawler stood up and said she wasn't talking about that dummy Cole, she was talking about him. Lawler entered the ring. Springer asked if Kelly was too old for Lawler, and Lawler said it was borderline. The celebrity whore Bella Twins then came to the ring. They had their own shocking relationship to reveal. Nikki said that Bree's a man. Bree slapped her sister and they had a brief skirmish until security pulled them apart. And Springer said that they already knew Bree was a man, but he wants to know who was in the room with Kelly. Chris Masters' music played, and he walked in the ring with a dopey smile on his face while pointing at himself, and then he bounced his titties a couple of times, and Kelly said she couldn't help herself because of his pecs. Eve Torres came to the ring and asked Kelly what she was doing messing with her man. They had a brief pull apart, and then Masters said Eve wasn't getting the job done to explain why he ended up with Kelly. Eve said she has her own secret. She said she's been cheating on Chris with someone who's more of a man than he is. Great Coley's music played. He came to the ring with Renjin Singh, and then the people in the ring were chanting Jerry while the live crowd sat in stunned silence by the stupidity that they were seeing. Santino said he wanted to know who the father is. Springer said he had the paternity results already. Santino questioned how that was possible since it's all happened 3 days ago. Eat your heart out, Maury, Springer said in reference to the wonderful, the great Maury Povich. Awesome show. If you're looking for some trash TV to watch, I recommend Maury over Springer any day of the week. Lie detectors and paternity tests might be the greatest 2 hours of television you'll see, at least during the daytime, at least when the Olympics aren't on. He opened the envelope and said, this can't be right. How do you pronounce this? Santino yelled, Hornswoggle. And out came Hornswoggle. And Springer said, that's it. My name isn't Maury. I'm out of here. And after Springer left the ring, Lawler asked the others if they should let him off the hook. He said they knew Springer was coming to the show, so they wanted to put on a charade for him. Lawler said Kelly isn't pregnant and there haven't been any rendezvous. And he said he doesn't think Kali even knows what the hell's going on. Runjin Singh said that Kali thought it was a waste of time. Lawler said there was one intimate relationship he wanted to reveal. He said Jerry Springer likes his women young. And cue Mae Young's music. She came out and molested Springer with a big kiss. And as I wrote last night, he looked petrified at the time. This was embarrassing. You know, if you're somebody who can just... if you want a little bit of dumb fun on your wrestling show, well, I guess you got a lot of it. I didn't care for it. I was really turned off by this, and I'm just sitting there thinking, you have a pay-per-view on Sunday that you're not doing a good job of hyping, but you know, here it is. The creative team gets their moment of glory when they get to write some stupid script for Jerry Springer. It really did feel more Maury than Springer, although I guess I got to be honest. I haven't watched Jerry Springer, and I never really got into it, and I haven't watched a real episode of that show in like a decade. So I don't know what the hell Jerry Springer's become. The third match of the night was Ted DiBiase pinning Kofi Kingston in 255. I think Ted was still selling the big boot that he took from Sheamus because he kept holding the back of his head throughout the match. Kofi dominated the match, but then Ted caught him out of nowhere with Dream Street and scored the pin. As I mentioned in the hit list, both guys really needed to develop some momentum on this show heading into the Elimination Chamber to make anyone take them seriously. And, you know, I was hopeful that at least one of them would. Neither guy did. I don't know what they're doing with Kofi. I don't know what's changed since the Madison Square Garden show where they gave him that big moment with Randy Orton because he just really hasn't been showcased in a meaningful way since then. In fact, he's lost a lot of television matches and pay-per-view matches, and just seems like they did the old start and stop bit with Kofi, and I don't know why. You'd think that Ted would have gotten something out of this match because he got the pin on Kofi, but it was just, you know, they treated it like filler. It was just out there for the two or 3 minutes, I guess it was, And Ted's, you know, that once Ted got the win, they just kind of moved on to the next thing. So I didn't see this as a real momentum gaining moment for Ted either, unfortunately. The second entrant, official entrant in the class of 2010 WWE Hall of Fame is Antonio Inoki. This news has been out there now for probably a week or two because the WWE, the Japanese version of the WWE website revealed this, and there have been ceremonies overseas for Antonio Inoki and everything, so no big surprise here if you've been following along on .net. That what they didn't tell you and has come out is that former AWA champion and all-around pro wrestling legend Stan Hansen is going to be doing the handling the induction for Inoki. So I don't know when they'll officially announce that. You know, on the American, North American, or English version, I guess I should say, of the WWE website. But for now, it's just it's Inoki. But look for that Stan Hansen announcement sooner or later. We got the announcers talking about. We're actually leading into a replay of the Bret Hart segment. Cole said that they just received video footage from the security camera in the area, and then they showed black and white footage of the car backing into the door of Hart's limo. And Cole said that Hart's leg was caught in the door, and Lawler said they were still waiting for a medical update, which they never did get. They ran through the Elimination Chamber lineup, didn't bother to add anything new to the lineup, and then we got Jerry Springer standing backstage in front of a makeshift set for his show, and he asked questions about the various what-ifs regarding the Elimination Chamber and wrapped it up and headed off with Mae Young and said, "Please don't judge me." This was kind of a takeoff of the little speech that after all the chaos that ensues on the Jerry Springer show, at the very end of it, he gives some big message, some speech at the end, and so that's what this was. I do remember that much about the Jerry Springer show. We got highlights from SmackDown of Batista walking out in his interview with Josh Matthews from last week, and then John Cena came to the ring, and they showed footage of Batista attacking him. Cena said, and Cena was watching the video on the live screen, or the big screen, and he said that he doesn't know Hart's condition, but he wanted to wish him well and let him know that everyone's pulling for him. He said he was brutally attacked by Batista and did nothing to provoke it that he was aware of. Cena said that Batista was coming to Raw to address his threats, and so he said he figured he'd stand there and serve as one hell of a welcoming committee. He invited Batista to join him in the ring and said he doesn't make threats. Batista was shown on the big screen sitting in a chair and was live via satellite, like I said, in the hit list. I just assumed this was BS and that we were going to get Batista showing up and crashing the main event. Didn't play out that way. Batista waved at the camera and said, "Hi, John." And Cena said he'd turn his back since that's what made Batista appear last time. Batista calmly stated that Cena really doesn't want him there. Cena called him out again. Batista smiled. He says, "I'm no dentist, but I'll take care of that smile for you right here and right now." Batista said it's funny to him that Cena runs his mouth when he's not there. And he said, "Next week I'll be at Raw." He said, "Good luck in the Elimination Chamber," and said he and claimed he was pulling for him. And Cena told Batista that if he wanted some, come get some. I really thought Batista shined here. He didn't say much. As I noted last night, the laid-back promo style that he delivers conveys both confidence and a bit of mental instability all at the same time. He comes across like he's not exactly playing with a full deck. And so I like what we're getting from Batista. I think he looks like he's having a lot of fun with his heel character, and he's doing a really good job. We got Triple H coming out. Then they announced that the hosts for next week are Jewel and Bull Rider Ty Murray. They are a married couple. Those of you who watched Johnny Fairplay on the Celebrity Bull Riding show will remember Ty Murray was the host of that, and his wife and her large breasts were all over that show. Fourth match was Triple H fighting John Cena to an apparent no contest in 11:45. I just kind of sat back and waited for the Batista, you know, interference, something cheap to end this match. I didn't figure we'd get a clean pinfall. They did a lousy job of building this match up through the night. And we did get a run in, but it wasn't Batista. It was actually Sheamus. Hunter was going for a pedigree, and that's when Sheamus threw his belt in the ring and then nailed Hunter with a big boot to the face to end the match. And then afterwards, Sheamus went after Cena, who fought him off briefly, but Sheamus caught him with a big boot to the face, and Cole said that Sheamus put everyone on notice heading into the Elimination Chamber. Sheamus picked up Hunter and hit him with the still unnamed finishing move. Razor's Edge, for those of you who remember Razor Ramon. And Sheamus held up the title belt to close the show. It was hard for me to get into Hunter and Cena because they didn't do a lot of hype for that match. This is one of their true marquee matchups, and I don't know why they didn't make a bigger fuss out of this throughout the night than they did. But I was happy to see Sheamus was the guy rather than Batista. Sheamus needs that more than Batista does. And I know there's a, you know, Raw audience that doesn't watch SmackDown, that doesn't get to see a lot of Batista, but there's still time to do things with Batista. Sheamus is the champion featured in one of the Elimination Chamber matches. He should, you know, there should be a reason that fans want to see him get his ass kicked. And in this case, he, you know, took out both Hunter and Cena. It wasn't real violent, wasn't particularly memorable, but at least they gave him that moment. So at the end of the night, Sheamus was standing tall over both Hunter and Cena. Again, overall, I thought this was the worst Raw of 2010. There's a good chance that, you know, what the readers have said about them probably, you know, this whole Bret Hart situation just being a swerve to get Vince to sign the contract or something. It's a good chance that comes to fruition. When it does, the whole thing will make a little more sense. But it didn't make for a good night of TV viewing, as far as I'm concerned. If you just look at it as an individual show, it didn't make me wonder. I guess they didn't really make me care. What about Bret's leg? It's like, well, he's not an active wrestler anyway. Hate to be cold, but can we get back to the guys that are going to be on the pay-per-view this week? You know, it's just, they didn't hook me. They didn't really make me feel like I never, you know, it was hard to suspend my disbelief. The whole thing just looked so campy. It was like, who's the random blonde woman, and why is she backing her car? And that, it just was, it wasn't well done. It didn't really hook me into the whole storyline. I wasn't sitting there waiting for updates on Bret. I was kind of rolling my eyes more than anything. And then that abomination with Jerry Springer, the letdown three matches. I mean, I enjoyed what we got from Orton versus Sheamus, even though you kind of knew we were going to get some kind of non-finish there. Same with Hunter and Cena. Both matches were fun while they lasted, but you just never really got your hopes up thinking that you were going to see a real finish to those matches. And then the one where we did get a clean finish of the three advertised matches just felt throwaway. And we only got one other match in the entire show. So this was just not a good lead-in for or a good go-home edition of Raw heading into the Elimination Chamber. I didn't enjoy it at all. Rich Twilling, who did members audio last night, seemed to enjoy it a lot more than I did. I think we were watching different shows because I just thought the Bret thing was just silliness. And the overall show was just a big letdown. And it just, you know, when on a go-home show, the thing you should ask yourself at the end of it, did this make me want to see the pay-per-view more? In my case, I know I'm going to order it, obviously. It's my gig, so I'm going to see the pay-per-view. But I can still ask myself, did this make me want to see this show more? And if you're at home, you can ask yourself, did it make you want to order the pay-per-view? Whether you intend to or not, did it make you feel like, wow, I'd kind of like to see this? Even if you're not going, you know, if it's not in your budget, whatever. And in this case, I think the answer for most of us is going to be no, they really didn't. And it's too bad because WWE had been on a real roll of quality Monday Night Raws dating back to January 4th. We got through a lot of the silliness that they had in November and December last year and really started producing some good television for, you know, good 5 weeks. And unfortunately, it came to an end last night. You know, the Springer silliness, I guess we moved on from that. I'm not looking forward to watching Santino, Morella, or Hornswoggle ride a fake bull, which I'm guessing we'll see next week. I am looking forward to seeing Jewel. You know, just in general, this overall, this was not a good night for WWE Raw. And if they produce a lot of shows like this, then maybe TNA isn't making such a bad decision going directly head-to-head with WWE or Raw on Monday nights. If it's me, I still take the unopposed hour and only run head-to-head with, you know, in the 8 o'clock central hour with Raw because I just think there's so much more you can do as far as leading into that, into the second hour of your show that goes head-to-head with Raw. You can really do a hot angle there, you know, build up something and also build up a main event. So if nothing else, you get people flipping back and forth. So I'm not crazy about TNA's decision to go directly head-to-head with WWE. But like I said, if WWE is going to produce shows like this, once the head-to-head battle start, I think you're going to be seeing a lot of people turning channels when crap like the Jerry Springer stuff starts. You know, at least Bret Hart is a WWE Hall of Famer that the people still care about. And so they might have a little more patience with, you know, kind of strange angles like they did with Brett last night. But some of this campy comedy crap that they're doing, I'm sure it appeals to someone, but I really think the masses are sitting at home kind of rolling their eyes over this stuff. And when there's true competition and if people are aware of it, which is on TNA to really have an aggressive marketing campaign, if they can get the word out, I think you're going to see more people turning the channel rather than suffering through some of these skits. But who knows? Maybe it's one of those things where it's like, you know, the whole car wreck mentality where you just can't take your eyes off, but it's so bad. It wasn't that way for me. If I could have turned the channel last night, I definitely would have had I not been covering the show live. It was just embarrassing. But that is going to do it for now. Don't forget there's a ton of stuff on the .NET members site. It is an ad-free version of the site. There's a .NET members forum. We're going to have exclusive audio for the Elimination Chamber as well as the .NET weekly audio show, which this week is coming up on Thursday. And Rich Twilling and I will run through all the news of the week. It's already stacking up with this Jericho stuff, the TNA big announcement, and leading into the Elimination Chamber. I'm sure we'll preview that as well. So already looking like another news-filled week, and so it should be a fun .NET weekly show on Thursday this week, bumping it up because Rich is actually going to be moving. So we'll bump it up, and then Wednesday will be the first part of the Q&A. Friday will be part two. So loads of audio for those of you who like it. And if you missed it yesterday, I was actually a guest on Wade Keller's PW Torch livecast, and you can find out the information on that show. Catch a replay of that where we took calls and answered a lot of questions about the big TNA announcement. And you can find out about that at pwtorch.com. So plenty of audio options out there for you guys. Hope you guys enjoyed this, and I had a fun time doing it. Thank you, everybody, who was kind enough to send emails and Twitter messages and everything else regarding the recent two-year anniversary of ProWrestling.net. It's been a really fun 2 years, and I appreciate all the support, whether you're a .NET member, whether you just check out the site, the ad-based version of the site on a regular basis, or, hell, even once a week. Everything adds up, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon.